Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, another Super Tuesday has come and gone.
It was Super Tuesday indeed. The question is, what was the message of Super Tuesday 2012?
Big win for Mitt Romney.
Well, certainly he won 6 out of the 10 states. He won the big, crucial state of Ohio, where all the focus was. But Rick Santorum is not going away anywhere. He won Oklahoma. He won Tennessee. He won the North Dakota caucuses.
Several thousand people participated.
He still remains as the principal alternative to Mitt Romney, the conservative alternative. And we can't discard Newt Gingrich. He won his home state handily in Georgia and says he will continue on next week into Alabama and Mississippi.
Newt Gingrich, odd speech. Two words, bunny rabbits.
Bunny rabbits?
Yes. Why the analogy? Why Newt Gingrich calling himself the tortoise? Had you thought of Newt Gingrich as a tortoise before?
No, but I do think of Mitt Romney as the heir apparent.
There we go. Yeah. Excellent. Not bad. And with very little warning. All right. So how many bunny rabbits can you name? We had Tim Pawlenty.
Yeah.
We had Michelle Bachmann.
Right. We had Rick Perry. Herman Cain.
All these were, I presume, bunny rabbits. People who sped through, who clearly were going to be the nominee, and then it didn't happen.
Well, all those bunny rabbits came when there were no voters out there either. I mean, I think they were just looking for, okay, I don't like Mitt Romney, so let me focus on one candidate for 15 minutes. And when I got tired of that candidate, which everybody seemed to do, they went on to the next one. Then came the actual votes starting January 3rd.
That's right. And we had a different campaign, really, from week to week. We've had the rise of Newt Gingrich, the fall. We've had the rise of Rick Santorum, the fall. We have yet to have that wonderful moment at which Ron Paul actually won an event. He keeps finishing second. I think he finished second in 4 events on Super Tuesday.
The only thing I think we could say about Ron Paul right now is that he's staying in the race. He has his fervent group of supporters. But I don't see where he wins. I mean, Alaska would have been a great place. North Dakota would have been a great place. And that's where, when this whole process, 2012 process began, we thought that's where he's going to make his mark. But
well,
he's not.
We had these terribly small events on Super Tuesday in Alaska and Idaho and North Dakota, just a handful of thousands of people voting in name. I believe it was 2% of the voting age population in Alaska. That's like half of what we saw in Iowa. Tiny, tiny events, and that would have been perfect for Ron Paul. But at least in Alaska and Idaho, we seem to have had a sizable Mormon vote. And then in North Dakota, Rick Santorum's fans came out, and Ron Paul was again denied.
Okay, but I think that's all we need to say about Ron Paul right now, because I don't see where he wins. I don't see where he gets a huge delegate bump. But I think the real question right now is not so much what does Ron Paul do, but what does Newt Gingrich do, in that, yes, of the 10 contests on Tuesday, he won his home state of Georgia. And next week, he has opportunities in Alabama and Mississippi,
which had previously been thought of, since they do border the other two states where he won. South Carolina swoops into Georgia, then we go west into Alabama and then Mississippi. It seems like his little block, it would be approximately the Strom Thurmond block from 1948, the Barry Goldwater
block from
1964.
Sure.
And those states have voted together in many cases, many instances. It would have appeared to be good territory for Newt, but now people are all kind of talking about Rick Santorum in those states.
Yeah, what's the reason for voting for Newt Gingrich? I mean, yes, he won his home state, and God bless.
And he won it easily. It wasn't close. Yeah, he had almost half the vote.
Right, right. But if he doesn't win in Alabama and Mississippi, what's the argument for Newt Gingrich after? I mean, you saw him on Tuesday night saying that the media elite have once again dismissed his candidacy. And look,
I saw it on television.
Yeah, it was in that other media. But it wasn't only the media elite that dismissed him. It was his own staff that ran away from him in June and July. So I mean, look.
Well, that's ancient history. Now you're talking about 2011 at one of the two or three ups and downs in the Gingrich candidacy. But he does appear to be once again up against it. He had to win Georgia, as he himself said. Now he clearly has to win Mississippi and or Alabama.
Look, there have been 21 contests. He's won 2 of 21. Now, I do know that in South Carolina and Georgia, the two states that he's won, gas is now $2.50 a gallon there. So it's working already.
Excellent.
Because if he's president of South Carolina and Georgia, then the gas goes down. But, you know, we're burying the lead here. And that is, a week ago, Rick Santorum had a fairly sizable lead in Ohio, although it was diminishing all week. And if that was the main contest everybody focused on, Mitt Romney won it.
Clearly, whoever got Ohio was going to get the headline, particularly if they could put it together with a backup story. A backup story was he won 5 other states.
But I want to point out that on Super Tuesday 2008, John McCain won, the front runner and the ultimate nominee, won 9 out of the 21 contests on Super Tuesday, losing 12 of them, a bunch to Romney, a bunch to Huckabee. That's even a worse percentage.
That's right, but he was clearly the nominee after that for two reasons. One, there were 20-some events, so there were that many out there. He could win nine. And two, we had a lot of winner-take-all.
And he won states like New York and California, which was a huge amount of delegates, right, exactly.
So after that, there was no clear path for anybody else to get the nomination. Huckabee stuck around for a while, but that was just for attention.
And Mitt Romney left 2 days after Super Tuesday 4 years ago by saying, look, I could still run. I could probably pick up a state here and there, but I don't want to hurt the party. If the ultimate goal is to beat Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, my staying in the race will hurt the party. That's exactly what Mitt Romney said 4 years ago. That's exactly what Mitt Romney would love to hear from one of his rivals in 2012, and he won't.
Is that what he would like to hear from one of his rivals, or is he better served by having both Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich contesting Alabama and Mississippi, depressing the vote total that either one will get, and even Ron Paul, for that matter, keeping a certain number of votes away from those other options to Mitt Romney? If he were running all by himself against just Rick or just Newt, would he not be in a weaker position?
That's a fair question, but then look at what happened in Oklahoma and Tennessee. I mean, you could say that, well, then Mitt Romney should have won them because you had two conservatives, Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich, as opponents, and yet Rick Santorum won those two very conservative states. So I don't know what it would be like one-on-one. But let me just switch subjects for one quick second. And this, a lot of people have been talking about this. If the Republican Party is going to lose in November, then the message will be the Republican Party is too moderate, too liberal. We need to be much more conservative in 2016. If we lose with Rick Santorum, we say, wait a second, this Republican Party is going over the cliff. We've got to come back to see reality.
Who are we? In that sentence, in that construct, are you talking about the predominant mind of the Republican Party?
Yes.
And in that case, you're probably right, that if people are starting to talk about the prospect, which they did not at one time admit, that actually Barack Obama could win a second term because the party isn't doing too well in setting up somebody to run against him. And this is the George Will column that's gotten so much comment. George Will saying, well, let's face it, it's either Santorum or it's Romney. Neither one's going to win. So let's start talking about the post-November world, the second Obama term. And the anger that obviously inspired.
Well, and already to talk about the fact that the Republican Party is going to lose in March of 2012 when it is ridiculous, as late in the campaign as September back in 2008, polls showed that the McCain-Palin ticket was going to win.
They were ahead.
It didn't last that long, but still. So, I mean, look, I'm not writing off the Republican Party, but it's just interesting to see what would be the more interesting course for them. If the party was going over a cliff, do you want to go over a cliff with Romney or do you want to go over a cliff with Santorum?
Well, on the other hand, then there are the conservatives who remember 1964, and they know what people said after Barry Goldwater got his shot as a true conservative and lost hugely to LBJ.
Six states he won.
And LBJ running up to, 62% of the popular vote. That, in many people's minds, was the golden birthing moment of the conservative movement that led to Ronald Reagan.
Don't even go that far. Go 2 years later when they got 47 seats in the House. Richard Nixon 2 years after that.
Right. But that was a unifying moment in a sense. That was a moment in which the conservative movement felt energized even in defeat.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
All right. So that would argue against the idea that they want to nominate Mitt Romney and have the moderates blamed for a second term of Barack Obama.
So getting back to Super Tuesday night, we have Mitt Romney once again focusing on November, focusing on the general election, focusing on President Obama and how to beat him. But you still have Alabama, Mississippi coming up. You have Kansas, which I don't know what's going to happen with there. But
it's 0-3 for Romney in those events. I don't see Romney winning any of the three.
Until March 20th in Illinois.
Illinois is his chance to right the ship again and say, well, now that we're back in a big Middle Western state. And really, I mean, we do have a regional development here. If you look at the Santorum states and you can draw a line among them, it's North Dakota, it's Minnesota, it's Iowa, Missouri. They touch upon each other. Tennessee comes into the picture. Then he's probably going to
Oklahoma.
Do well. And he won Oklahoma. And he's probably going to do well in these other states you mentioned, including Kansas. He is getting a heartland concentration here, whereas, obviously, Santorum is not doing so well in the East. He's not winning in the Northwest. He's probably not going to win outside of that heartland construct. But what we're looking at for him or for Gingrich at this point is not getting 1,144 delegates before we get to Tampa. It's keeping Romney from doing it. And when we see this kind of result in the next three events, it's going to make people think again, Romney can't get there. He can't get to the convention with enough delegates.
And yet you see an impatience among whatever the Republican establishment is, or just the Republican electorate out there saying that, look, this is great, this was a lot of fun, but enough is enough. You see the Eric Cantors, you see the Tom Coburns, you see George Pataki. I mean, when George Pataki...
weighing in.
When George Pataki endorses somebody, you know the race is over.
Straight just, down from Delphi.
I'm just waiting for Malcolm Wilson. When he endorses, that could be it.
That would be it.
It would be it. In many ways.
So... here's a whole new subject, a new thing on the block. Congress, we're starting to have primaries for congressional seats. Ohio is the first state.
That's right. We've had 21 states so far, but this is the first one where congressional primaries are involved. This is Ohio. And three very interesting results, I thought. One was expected in the 9th Congressional District in the northern part of Ohio that combined Marcy Kaptur's Toledo-based district and Dennis Kucinich's Western Cleveland district. Kaptur won very big. It was mostly her territory. She got much more money. Kucinich was busy either running for president or shopping for a district in Washington State.
Yeah. I think that story killed him.
I think it didn't
help. When he started talking about going out and running for Jim McDermott's seat in Seattle, I mean, what in the world is that?
Well, like? Actually, no, there are three. There's Jay Inslee, as you well know, is running for governor. There's a new seat in Olympia because she's leaving Maine. This is confusing even to me. And Norm Dix is retiring. So anyway, so two of the things that hurt Dennis Kucinich, of course, is that most of the
talking to aliens.
Most of the territory was mostly from Marcy Kaptur's district. He didn't raise nearly as much money as she did. She, by the
way... surprising to me.
She is a senior woman in the House.
But, I mean, his low fundraising was surprising because he has a national fundraising base, or one would think he
did. He does, but she's also in line to be the next chair of the House Appropriations Committee, and that's where the real money comes in. He also ran for president twice. A lot of people said he ignored his Cleveland-based district. And also, for a while, when they thought that they would eliminate his district in the Republican-led redistricting folks in Columbus, whatever it's called.
Legislature.
Whatever you say, Ron. He was seriously considering looking at Washington State for perhaps an open seat to shop for, which is amazing.
Again, I'm estimating himself to have some sort of national appeal to Democrats. Is there any chance that Dennis Kucinich tries to go out there and do something?
Well, that's the fascinating thing, because according to the law, state law, May 18th is the filing deadline in Washington State. He has to be a resident of Washington State by April 18th. But of course, if he's a resident of Washington State, then he can't be a resident of Ohio. And to represent Ohio in Congress, he has to be a resident of Ohio.
So he'd have to resign his seat.
Resign his seat if he's going to run for Washington State. And not to say that the folks in Washington will welcome him. I'm sure there are plenty of Democrats out there who are very happy with the potential candidates they have.
Well, and let's remember that here's a fellow who has a lot of interest in being in the public limelight and who wants to stay in politics and has run for president before. Does he cast an eye on Americans Elect and try to get himself involved in the online third-party option business that we've talked about several times on the podcast? Does he try to get into national politics?
The reason I think no is because I think what Americans Elect is looking for is a centrist or a middle ground between left-wing extremism of Barack Obama, I say that in quotes, and the right-wing extremism of the Republican Party, whoever the nominee will be. They want somebody
in
the middle.
Are you going to put that in quotes as well?
Well, that's two quotes, and four quotes is a gallon. And so the thing is, Dennis Kucinich would not be in the middle of that. Funny joke.
So by winning this primary, Marcy Kaptur has won the right to oppose a rather famous first-time candidate on the part of the Republican Party.
Samuel Wurzelbacher, also known as Joe the Plumber, who was of 2008 campaign fame. But the last time, as you well know, a Republican won that seat, or at least in that Toledo area, Ed Weber in 1980. Come
and you
on,
know
Ron.
What happened to Ed.
Yeah.
So here's the question then. If the Ohio delegation has lost its most liberal member in Dennis Kucinich, arguably, did it also lose its most conservative member in Gene Schmidt to be replaced by someone else equally conservative?
Well, that's what happened in the 2nd Congressional District when the Schmidt hit the fan. Gene Schmidt defeated by a Tea Party-backed conservative. Now, Gene Schmidt is very, very conservative.
She was quite conservative.
Yes, she is.
This is the woman who got famous for her remarks about John Murtha, the late John Murtha.
They cut and run.
Of course, being implicitly questioning the bravery of John Murtha, the often decorated former Marine.
Right. We're talking about the Iraq strategy there, but absolutely. But Jean Schmidt, very conservative. She won the special election when Rob Portman left to do whatever he's doing now. I have no idea. Joined
he
the Bush
United
cabinet.
States Senator, yes, of course, Mitt Romney's lead campaigner in Ohio,
that's
possibly
right.
A vice presidential
and
candidate.
Very possibly McCain's running mate in 2008. I'm still predicting that.
You still are?
Yeah.
No, I was still with Jack Kemp, who was dead at the time.
Okay. There's also one more result in Ohio worth talking about. A new congressional district centered in Columbus, Ohio. The Republicans did everything they can to elect him. What they did is, by protecting three other Republicans, by making their seats more and more Republican,
they jammed all the Democrats into the center.
In this new district in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, that sounds like a great district for Mary Jo Kilroy.
Well, who served for one term from 2008 to 2010. Everybody thought she was likely to come back to Congress. She lost her Democratic primary to a former minority leader of the Ohio House, an African-American woman, and she will win the seat in November. For the first time in history, there will be two African-American members representing Ohio in Congress at the same time.
Big news on the other side of Congress elections this year. In the Senate, Olympia Snow has surprised everyone late last week by telling her party, she won't be their candidate in November.
And everybody said, great news for the Democratic Party. The Democrats are going to pick up the seat. Right. There's no problem with that at all.
They forgot Angus King.
Angus King, first of all, Maine is very receptive to independent candidates. Ross Perot's best states both times he ran were Maine. Matter of fact, in 1992, he finished ahead of George H.W. Bush.
Who was actually a resident of the state of Maine.
That's very interesting. Kenny Rudin Bunkport, I think we called him back then. And they also have elected independent governors in the past. Jim Longley in 1974, Angus King in 1994, and again in 98.
And he remains remarkably popular in a time when people don't care for politicians of either the normal stripes.
Well, he's a social liberal and he's a pro-business guy. He backed George W. Bush in 2000, although trashed him in 2004, but, I mean, he's kind of
covered all the bases.
True independent. He announced late Monday that he was going to announce his candidacy, and Shelley Pingree, the very progressive, very liberal member of Congress from Maine, was all set to be the Democratic nominee. She was ready to go in. The left was, you know, pushing her to go in. She announced on Wednesday that she's not going to do it, scared to death, one, of Angus King, who remains very popular.
But also a divided vote.
And that's what happened with Paul LePage. The
yes.
reason they have a very conservative Tea Party governor in Maine is that the independent candidate and the Democrats split the left of center vote, electing LePage. She didn't want to be part of that.
So the big question becomes, does this become Angus King's seat? Is there anyone else who is in the race who could take him on? Republicans' best candidate, probably going to shoot for the House instead, not take on Angus King. And if he is going to be the odds-on favorite, with whom does he caucus?
That's the question. That's
when
the question.
He gets here in November or January of next year, does he keep the Democrats in power, or does he decide to go with the Republicans and put them in power?
It's hard to imagine. We always talked about this when it was a very closely divided Senate. We always thought if Joe Lieberman switches parties, he could hold the balance of power.
Or Ben Nelson from Nebraska.
Right, right. But Angus King could very well, I mean, right now, look, it's early, it's March. He is the front runner for the seat. Republican Party is probably happy with that because they knew that, if anything, it was going to be a Shelley Pingree seat, a Democratic seat. And so now there'd probably be a wooing going on of the two parties for Angus King.
Speaking of wooing, that leads to the issue of contraception, does it not? And what is going to happen with Rush Limbaugh and the extraordinary difficulty he's gotten into? Could this be the end of Rush?
That's not the question you should be asking. I mean, we've
seen... I don't think it is the end of Rush. He can lose advertisers and remain just as popular as he's been on the air.
Well, I'm not sure how popular is it, but the show will remain as widely listened. But here's the thing. It's coming at a time when the Republican Party is having serious difficulties appealing to women, and this issue of contraception... Look, the Republican right is saying this is about religious liberty, and I understand that. But Rush Limbaugh didn't make it that way. He made it into a personal attack on this woman, talked about calling her a slut and a prostitute, and saying that, well, if she wants public money for her taking these contraception, then maybe we should be allowed to watch her videos. It was so over the top and cruel.
But who is Rush Limbaugh? Rush Limbaugh is a radio personality. He is someone who has an enormously popular 20 million listeners radio program. Here's the big question I think a lot of people don't understand. Why does that have to matter to the Republican Party?
Because of several things. First of all, yes, since President Obama was elected, the Democratic Party has somewhat effectively tried to equate the Republican Party with Rush Limbaugh. They say that they mouth
his words. Sets policy for
they
the
sets
Republican
policy.
Party.
They use his talking points. They have Republicans on as guests all the time. Rush Limbaugh is very, very popular with the Republican rank and file. But this comes at a time when the Republican Party is having trouble with women, with women's issues.
And Rush Limbaugh took this off into a direction and with a kind of rhetoric and a kind of ire and anger that bespeaks a certain caricature, really, of the Republican position on contraception. And that's been an enormous boon. The president stepped right in and gave a call to the Georgetown law student to make sure she was okay and to make sure he got himself associated with her and against the Rush Limbaugh position we just described.
And in fairness, members of the Republican Party have done the same. Mitt Romney said, "This is not the kind of language I would use." I believe Rick Santorum criticized it as well. So it seemed like the Republican Party knew this was going to be painful for them, and I think that they were ready to back away from Rush Limbaugh.
And we wish to note this week the passing of Donald Payne, a House member elected in 1988, elected later to be the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, and a longtime representative of the African-American community of New Jersey.
Right. He's from Newark. He served in local positions in Newark. And, you know, several times, once upon a time, Newark was a strong Italian-American bastion. But even as it turned from Italian-American to African-American, Peter Rodino stayed in the seat. Donald Payne says it's crazy. He ran against it twice, lost. But when Rodino finally retired in 1988, it opened up the seat for Donald Payne, wanted to be a congressman all his life. Very effective, very strong on human rights, the suffering going on in Darfur and elsewhere in Africa. Donald Payne was one of the leading voices in Congress on that. He died, age of 77, of colon cancer.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Tuesday afternoon. I'm just beginning.